SiriusXM master switch has been thrown, Skynet is active. Call now before a city you care about disappears behind the Terminator. Save them now by calling 855-REAL-UFO. That's 855-732-5836.
That's a Dr. Jacobs kind of voice, I would say. What do you think? Listen, Dr. Lear is a physician, a surgeon, and he removes implants from people and then has them examined. So this is pretty wild stuff. There's no question about it. I don't know what leads a physician down this path. In fact, we'll ask about that. But I asked him what people report, people who have implants, what they say. Are they being led in a different direction in life? Are they receiving messages? Is it in some way manipulating them? That question hangs. And the moment I asked it, Dr. Lear began talking about Dr. Jacobs. Dr. Jacobs thinks that, you know, these aren't friendly beings at all. And he makes a very strong case for it. In fact, we should have him on the air, and will. And here's what I have to say, just before I bring him back on, Doctor, and that is, what do you think a cow believes? In other words, as a cow goes through life and is being raised, ultimately, to become a hamburger, it probably thinks the world is a pretty darn friendly place, because it's allowed to graze peacefully in the sun, eating. It's brought food frequently. It's certainly given water and nourishment. If it's ill, it's given shots to recover from whatever is bothering it. In other words, the cow is treated pretty darn well right up until the moment that it gets a hammer on the head, or however it's done, and turned into hamburger. Now, Dr. Lear, you know, is that where you were going with the Dr. Jacobs comment?
No, not really.
Yeah, but there is an analogy to be something to be followed there. Maybe they are not friendly. Maybe these are not nice gestures.
Let's go back to the cow.
Okay.
The cow is also at one time a calf, correct?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed, yes.
And don't we eat veal?
Well, yes.
So a cow is not necessarily going to make it through a lifetime where he's going to be or she is going to be leisurely grazing in the pasture. He may be eaten by the time he's a kid.
Oh, it's true. But even then, up until that moment, life seems good.
Well, life seems good probably to a chicken. Look what we do to a fish. Or, let's say, a marine mammal. We pull them out of the water.
Yeah, you're making my case, Doctor. You're making my case.
Sure.
In other words, they may or may not be our friends. And, you know, they may have a time scale.
Well, let's say they're not.
Okay.
Let's look at how many millions of years we've been allowed to graze.
Well, again, they may have a time scale that doesn't quite match up with our clocks.
Well, why not just come here tomorrow? Well, let me put the question to you. Why wait for tomorrow? Why wait for tomorrow? Come today. Let's do it today.
I'm all for it. Maybe. I mean, depending on what the where we're headed when they arrive.
Well, I'm more afraid of what we got now here than somewhere from somewhere else.
Well, that's a well grounded fear, I would say.
The way we're going is not the greatest thing in the world.
I know. All right, so anyway, again, this question. Have you talked to people who have had the implants and have had anything to say about the way it is seemingly apparently affecting their lives? Or maybe it isn't at all.
That's my point. It is
okay. You're hitting, Doctor. You're hitting touch tones once in a while by mistake.
Excuse me.
You're hitting touch tones. You know, the tones on your phone by mistake.
No, I'm nowhere near the dial pad.
Really?
Absolutely not. at least 6 feet away from it on an extended cord.
Damn NSA. What's the matter with those people? All right.
Well, we'll let them hear what we have to say. They're tapping in everything anyway. Anyway, back to where we were as to what is actually being emitted from these objects. I think it's data. And I think the data is, that's where we were heading before I made the comment about omelets. But, okay. Since if we agree that, it's a possibility, and again, I want to say, and I've said this over and over again all over the world, if anybody gets, on the air on anybody's program or in a public, place, a public forum, and tells you they have all the answers, then, my thing is, you better put a finger in each ear and run as fast as you can go.
Oh, if you have all the answers, I don't even want to talk to you. It's impossible to have all the answers. So I'm afraid that puts people in a specific category that wouldn't be a good interview on the show.
Yeah. Well, that's why I kind of like to stay with the scientific approach. There's things that are theoretical, which you're allowed to do, and things that are not. But even things that are theoretical still have to be proven.
Right.
So that there's data. You know, that we know there's a data stream coming out of these objects. And I believe that the data has to do with the changes in our DNA that are now occurring on a regular basis.
Okay, so you don't think it's going the other way, Doctor. You think the data is outgoing and it's a monitoring sort of thing, not so much incoming and controlling in any way.
100%, because I'll tell you, I've talked to specific cases, a lady, for example, in Brazil that had an object, and she was told by the folks that put it in not to have it removed. And she asked them if it was a locating device, and they just showed her a bug that they stopped in a beam of light in midair. And we said that we can track this bug anywhere on this planet that we need to track it, and it doesn't need a device. And then shortly after that, I heard from some of the leading geneticists that we now know that all DNA, whether it's human or animal or whatever, all DNA contains its own specific electronic signature. So all you have to do then is be smart enough to build a device, and you can pick out anybody on the entire planet or anything. So they don't need them as tracking devices. Behavior control does not need a device. If you've been abducted and they look into your eye and they suggest things to you, they can block their memory, they understand the neural network, they know how to place things in your mind, they can make you see your dead relatives or whatever else they want to see, or they can make you see them as clowns or whatever. So.
I get it. I get it. So it's all outgoing data, and it probably has something to do with genetics, but they're clearly monitoring something. And
absolutely.
And again, I would ask you what are they monitoring, but you wouldn't have that answer, of course. You couldn't.
Well, my answer is that is the change in the genetic manipulation that's going on. Is it a successful manipulation or is it not? If we know that DNA gives off an electronic signature, it probably gives off information according to the DNA stranding.
Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? Well, one would imagine that a DNA change is a painfully slow thing to attempt to monitor unless you're affecting it in some way. So you're suggesting there's an abduction, there's a change made, and then they're monitoring that change with that device.
Right on the nail's head.
Okay.
Now, I want to modify that by saying, you know, I've got thousands of abductee cases, and a lot of them see grays, the typical, you know, bumper sticker, black-eyed grays.
Right, right.
A lot of the things like what we looked at in the Comburgus footage, by the way, So anyway, we see these grays and we look at them and we lump them all into one group because we're not astute enough to know that one set of grays may come from Zeta Reticuli and another set of grays may be us, 100,000 years in the future.
Right.
So we don't know one from the other. We look at, for people of skin color from various countries, and to Caucasians, they all look the same. Can't tell the difference. So we group them all into one group. So when you say grays, I think that's a misnomer, too, because there may be grays, 20 different races of grays visiting here. Maybe they don't all have the same procedures that they're doing. Maybe it's only a certain group that's doing abductions. Maybe David Jacobs is 100% on when he says there's a group that's making hybrids. I don't argue with that at all. All I'm saying is that the situation is so complex that the greatest possibility is that there's a number of things going on at the same time in relation to the field of alien abduction.
Mm-hmm. Well, what you've said does make sense in terms of abduction, implant, monitoring. Just basically what we would do, I guess, and... Gee, that kind of brings up another subject. There are many people, Doctor, who say this is all some kind of big cover, and it's our own government, God help us, doing these things to us. And your reaction to that is?
I believe, that $63 trillion has been spent on the black budget accumulated total. I believe that. But I also believe that when it's said that they may be 100 years ahead of academic technology, I think that could very well be the case, too. I think that we may be flying in space somewhere around our solar system, but I don't think we've left it. So we do have some advanced technology. In fact, Senator Gravel in this hearing admitted, in front of the witnesses and all the other people that were there and on streaming video, that we have our own space fleet. Now, that's quite a, admission coming from government.
It certainly is. I guess he actually said that he believed that was the case. He thinks it could be the case, or what?
That is the case. And you
that
can,
is the case.
Yeah, if you go into the archive, and I think it's still up on Citizens Hearing, you can get to the place where he makes that statement.
Wow.
So do we have the abilities to do these things? I think to a certain extent, but, just like when the object that went over your head, you could say, well, maybe that was some secret military thing, or maybe it was from somewhere else. But when you take the Phoenix situation and you have people reporting that one wing tip is over one mountain range and the other wing tip is over another mountain range.
Right.
I don't think that's from here.
All right. There's great argument about this everywhere I go, and that is, whether or not the White House, the president, actually, has knowledge of extraterrestrial presence here, or whether this is the kind of thing kept from presidents, or just some presidents.
Ah, what a wonderful and timely question, because I have my little pointer here on the website, artbell.com. And if the folks would click on the OSTP report given to President Obama, they will see a surprising document that answers your question in its entirety.
Where is it? Where is it? Now I'm the one saying, where is it? I'm in your photographs, your pictures. Is that
okay,
where I need to be, or...
No, you've got to click on the OSTP report, which is before that.
Okay.
Okay, show references, images for dark matter, Comburgus Turkey UFO, full image analysis shows occupants, and right below it is OSTP report.
Okay, got it, got it, got it. I've got it.
So you click on that, you'll see it says Black Vault, and then the Executive Office of the President, Office of Science, Technology, Policy. And this is dated March the 22nd, 2011, and you can see that certain names have been redacted, and this is in response to John Greenwald, who now has a huge number of documents on the Black Vault. He's the one that procured this for me. And the article is written by James C. Kallenberger, who is the head of this committee. And if you go down the report and enlarge it, makes it easier to see, you'll see that there's an entire report on me and the work that we have done with the implants, and how this was done at a time when Mr. Obama was looking for funds for his national health care plan. And, for example, it says, for just the facts, UFO investigators Lear and Mosier. Mosier is one of the scientists that was previously on our board. Offer compelling news of 2009 ex-conference press conference. Hard evidence that can be analytical and results point towards the non-human origin of the devices. So President Obama, is it in the White House? You bet your bottom dollar.
All right. Dummy me doesn't have Adobe Reader loaded, so I'm doing that. So he knows exactly what's going on.
Exactly. And if you want me to add a little more icing to this cake, when I arrived the first day at the citizens' hearing, I was met by Congresswoman Carolyn Kilpatrick, who grabbed me by the sleeve and took me aside and said, "There is someone who would that's here that would like to talk to you for a few minutes if you have time." So I said, well, of course. She didn't tell me who it was, and I had my assistant, Linda, with me. And so this was at the press club, and so she took me down to the bottom floor. We went to the little restaurant there, and as we noticed when we walked in the door, there were some very large black folk, very well dressed in suits, with a curly Q wire going into their ears, talking to their wrists. And we then were led around the corner to kind of a private area where there was a table set up. And who was sitting at the table but none other than Minister Louis Farrakhan.
Wow.
Now, Minister Louis Farrakhan had invited me and several other guests a few years back to lecture to the Muslim nation about UFOs. And he's been teaching for years his following that the UFOs are the wheels of Ezekiel in the Bible. So when we started giving out the information on ufology, of course mine was on the abduction situation and implants, I didn't know what the audience knew or what they didn't know.
Right.
But it turned out they knew just about as much as someone that was sitting in the audience of a UFO conference. And it was amazing. And he jumped up from the table. He was on the telephone. And I heard him say, "You'll have to excuse me. I will get back to you soon." So he got up and he came over with a very friendly greeting and told me how nice it was for me to be there and for him to see me again. And I was very excited about the whole situation. It was totally unexpected and so on. And then he got a call from the mayor of Chicago and excused himself and went back to the table, and we went to the hearing. Well, 2 days later, I found out from an excellent source that Mr. Obama was in residence at the White House during the time of the hearing, and that the person that Mr. Farrakhan hung up on to excuse himself to talk to me was President Obama.
Okay.
So does the White House know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I've got a follow-up question. If we assume, for the sake of argument, that the president absolutely knows, or that all presidents have known for some time now, what rationale would the people who told the president about extraterrestrial presence, what rationale would they be able to present to the president to keep that information from the American people?
Well, again, we're talking about theoretical opinion, and it's my theoretical opinion that the majority of information on ufology has now passed from government, U.S. government, or any of the other government control into the hands of huge, giant corporate world monopolies. These are industries. And I found out something also at the hearing I thought was quite interesting. That was the Eisenhower speech, where he warned about the military-industrial complex.
Of course, yes.
I found out from a very, very reliable source on the committee that speech was changed 5 minutes before Eisenhower gave it. And
do
it should
have
read...
What it should have read what?
It should have read... The military congressional military complex.
Mm-hmm. Military congressional military
complex, right.
Complex. Well, it was pretty startling, just the way it was, frankly. But again, let's pretend I'm President Obama, all right? And you're the one who's told me this information, and I'm saying, look here, I want to speak to the American people. I want to tell them the truth. What would you say to me?
Well, if I was in a position to say anything, you know, who am I to tell the president anything? Because all the information is the so-called need-to-know basis. So
well, for the sake of this conversation, Doctor, you've got to pretend to be the person who absolutely has to convince me that this information cannot be given to the American people because they're not ready or whatever.
All right, I would tell you that, number one, that it is not in the interest of this nation's security to give you this information because of the advanced nature of what is going on. And that's about all that I'm going to tell you.
Oh, my goodness.
The security of the country.
Well, then I'm just going to go on TV. I'm going to get a prime spot, and I'm going to tell the American people everything. And we'll be right back.
You get a shiver in the dark. It's raining in the park. But meantime, sound of the river, you're stopping your whole everything. A band is blowing Dixie. Double fall time. You feel alright when you hear the music ring. Well, now you step inside, but you don't see too many faces. Coming in out of the rain, they hear the jazz go down. Competition in other places. But the horns, they blow in that sound.
truly prime number in the SiriusXM universe. For intelligent dark matter conversation, dial When the Spirit Moves, 855-REAL-UFO. That's 855-732-5836.
Okay, I'm going to open the lines now. Go ahead and open the lines, and let's start taking some calls for Dr. Lear. When you think about it, this is a pretty significant topic we've got going on here. We've got a physician, surgeon, who's been removing implants from people. Implants that, when they're checked out, have turned out to be a containing matter that is similar to that found in meteorites. In other words, outworldly. Maybe it's just monitoring. Maybe it's monitoring after there has been abduction. Whatever it is, it's, I don't know, it's either good or it's really bad. I have no way of knowing, and I guess nobody really does, until one day when it's all made clear to us, and that may be a good or a bad day as far as humanity is concerned. But if you'd like to call and you have a question, we've got a great phone number. They don't come any better. 855-REAL-UFO. That's 855-REAL-UFO or 855-732-5836. So, Doctor, you think that presidents know about all of this and they are told something that prevents them from going on TV and telling everybody. God knows every now and then a president needs something to take the American people's minds off of, you know, whatever political mess they're in at the moment, right? And yet they don't do it.
That's correct. And I think, you know, sometimes I feel sorry for presidents and other leaders of countries because they've lost the control. This country is, you know, our own country is not functioning now as it was set up to be, as our forefathers. I'm sure that I don't have to tell you the implications of that. But you know, they try, and some of them are maybe very sincere in doing the job that they're doing. But without the information, they're just like scientists who say, you know, I can't discuss this because I might lose my job. Or number two, look at we had one day of sworn testimony from military witnesses, an entire day at the hearing.
Oh, yes. In which
they testified they had to sign oaths of secrecy. And another thing that our audience might be interested in knowing, and I didn't know it, I learned as much there as maybe they did. But I found out that they've told us that these oaths that are taken of secrecy are not oaths to the organization for which the individual works with. In other words, if they were in the NSA or CIA or military intelligence and they took an oath of secrecy, that was not an oath that was given to that particular department, but that was an oath to the Constitution. The Constitution of the United States also has the right of redress, so that every single one of them has the legal right to go before Congress and say, I'm taking it back, I'm taking my word back, and I'm going to tell whoever it is that I want to tell. And there's nothing that can be done about it. It
takes a lot of guts to do that.
Takes a lot of guts. But, you know, look at the people that are now coming forth. Lots and lots of military officers that are still around that have, you know, guilty knowledge, and they're talking about it. So
there's also people who have told things and end up living in Russia because that's the only option they have.
Well, there are people who have told things that aren't living anywhere.
Another extremely good point. One that we've discussed on this program any number of times. This is something so big that taking a life or lives over it, I guess it's not too hard to imagine that, is it, Doctor?
Not too hard to imagine at all. When I think of cases like Stanley Meyer and John Mack and a few of the others I know.
I said that the other day about Professor Mack. You know, people, they accept what they're told. He didn't look the right way. boom, that's the end of that. And it was just at an incredibly, you know, right after the African thing.
Yeah.
I don't buy it.
I don't buy it either. He wasn't in poor health. He was in good health. Too much non-suspicion makes me suspicious.
Have you ever been in fear for your own life?
No, but that's just me, Art. I'm getting to be old. You know, I am old.
I'm getting old, too. I can hear footsteps.
Yeah, well, what the heck? I'm going to, you know, if I'm going to go out, I'll go out in a blaze of glory. I did, you know, one of the other radio shows one night, and I was on a cell phone talking, and I got cut off the air when I got home. I thought my battery went dead in the phone. The dash lights dimmed in the car, and I got home, and the battery wouldn't take a charge, so I took out the battery, and it was fried.
Yeah. See, this is the kind of thing I'm talking about. I wonder if those sorts of things are served up as warnings.
I think so. I think if you stay within the limits or within the boundaries of what they think isn't going to bother the public or the security of I'm not going to say the security of the nation, but the security of the greedy few, let me put it that way, that you may be okay. But you.
All right. I've got another avenue I want to go down here very quickly with you, and that is, look, you just said a few minutes ago that you had shingles. A couple hours ago, you had shingles, and it kind of wiped you out financially. Now, you're a physician. You've got to be, one would imagine, making a pretty good living. And my question is this, what in the world, doctor, would cause somebody like yourself, who could have a nice, comfortable life, he's a doctor, could be making good money, and just enjoying life and laying back, to begin to investigate extraterrestrial presence on Earth and all of these UFO sightings and, in your case, implants in human beings? I mean, my gosh, doctor, that's quite a jump to take, and I'm sure a very costly jump in many ways. How did it?
Well, it was a costly jump, not necessarily because of my illness, but when I got involved in the situation, you know, there wasn't any money to do research, so I started financing it myself.
Right.
And I've dumped a large sum of money into trying to find out, you know, this kind of information. Why did I do it?
Yes.
That's quite an interesting question. I, you know, was interested in Roswell when I was a kid. I remember my father bringing the newspaper and putting it down on the kitchen table, reading the headline of my mother, the U.S. Army Air Force captures a flying saucer. And then he went on into a long dissertation about, you know, I always told you, honey, that, you know, we're not the only living intelligent beings in this vast universe. And I stood there as a kid in the kitchen and listened to all this, and it made quite an impression upon me. And then when the headline came out, you know, it's not a saucer, it's a balloon. And my father was a very simple, practical person. You know, if you considered yourself a plumber, then you better know which way water went and the other stuff went too.
Yeah.
You know, if you were a mechanic for a car, then you better know everything about an engine. So I remember he said to my mother, and he was irate and furious, "Do you mean to tell me that the United States Army Air Force can't tell the difference between a balloon and
yes,
a saucer?"
Yes, sir. That's right. Oh, okay, I can understand the profound impact that would have on you from your father, no doubt about it. But what I guess I mean here, doctor, is as you, I could understand you having this as a kind of a hobby, as a kind of a thing to occupy you when you're not professionally engaged. However, as you begin a career as a physician, to decide to speak out publicly, that's a pretty big, expensive move.
That's, you're absolutely correct. And I didn't ever expect to be in that position. I got in this through a set of synchronicities that just sort of pushed me on. I did the first surgeries as a joke. I thought, you know, this guy was so funny. He's calling these things, hey, the implants. Well, you got to remember, you know, that when I started doing this, even organizations like MOFON wouldn't accept alien abduction as a real entity.
Oh, I know.
You know, they, you know, things flying in the sky, somebody flying them, come from somewhere else. Maybe they land once in a while, do this, do that. Stan Friedman talks. Then sure. All of a sudden we start hearing about Betty and Barney Hill. And
that's right.
Retriever and... a number of the other abduct Travis Walton, et cetera, cases. And then John Mack appears on the scene and adds legitimacy to a subject. He's a Harvard professor of psychiatry, and he's working with this guy, Bud Hopkins. And, you know, they're doing hypnosis, and, you know, these things could be real. That's about the time I got into this, and here's a guy comes along and says, I have x-rays of a foot with alien implants on it. You know, I heard that. I turned around and laughed my butt off and walked away.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody else told me to come back. Oh, come on. Listen to what he has to say. So I did. As a challenge, I said, well, you know, if you think these objects are so unusual, why don't you just take them out and see what they are?
And even said, well, even at that, I hear you. But even at that, Doctor, you could have kept it under wraps publicly. You didn't have to begin speaking out on shows like mine and other ones. You didn't have to jeopardize your professional career. You could have kept your mouth shut and done all this quietly.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. But, you know, again, the synchronicity took over, and I started finding things that I couldn't understand, and I had to talk to people. You know, I just found something doing the surgery. Have you ever seen anything like this before? No. What is it? Well, I don't know. You know, how do you get the shell off? How do you get the material off? I don't know. It's so hard we can't cut it through it with a scalpel. And so the word started, you know, getting around for the people I was asking, and it just began to spread until more people, you know, just started piling up. More people started hearing about it. And then if anybody had told me that I would write a book, I'm going to write a book on foot surgery or something else. Yeah, maybe. But to write a book on something as strange as abduction and implants, I would have told them they were insane. So people say, you know, this is some interesting data. Maybe other people would want to know about this. And then I met John White, who was a book agent. And he becomes my agent, and I turn out writing this book. And then after that, I started out, I didn't want anybody to know who I was. I was Dr. X, Dr. P,
right.
You know, some guy doing these weird surgeries. And then more and more and more people got interested until, you know, my name got out there, and I finally said, well, that's it. I've done it now. I've stepped over the line. So
once you're over. Yeah. In for a penny, in for a pound. Okay, let's go to the phones. Evan in Washington, you're on the air with Dr. X.
Yes, Roger, Art, this is Ryan from Washington. I actually know Roger. I'm helping him. I've helped him research this case in Turkey.
Oh. Do you know who he is, Doctor?
Yes, I certainly do, and I have to thank Ryan for his kindness in putting this material together in such a way that I can have it on my computer and then use it, for example, in the fashion that I sent it to you. He organized a lot of these videos and gave me information that I didn't have.
Okay. Very good. Ryan, is that what you're doing, organizing things for the doctor?
Well, yeah, basically everything is public information already, and it was basically broadcast all over the news in Turkey, and basically all that I've done is just translated it from Turkish to English and tried to just sort of break the news in the United States, so to speak. I wanted to ask Roger, could you go into more detail about you were standing on the beach, and can you describe what you saw? I mean, I think it would be important for the audience to hear that you saw entities there. You saw occupants there.
Let's do that. You know, it's one thing to see what a camera saw, and it's an entirely different thing to have actual eyes on. So, yeah, good idea.
Yeah, the first place, as Ryan mentioned, this was not right on the beach. It was kind of an elevated platform area where we could walk into like a very large patio. And there were a number of us there. I was certainly not the only one there. And as I mentioned, in 2009, there was an whole other camera crew there with Jaime Hassan and so on. But looked at the area. The sea was calm, and the moon was very bright. And I was saying to myself, you know, after we surveyed the area with binoculars looking for light contamination and seeing what the weather was like and no clouds and so on, and the wind was a very shallow breeze, not enough to cause any distortion in the camera, although, as I said, it was mounted on a tripod. And then, so to begin with, we began looking at the moon. And so we started focusing on the moon because the moon was bright. And then when we did this, maybe about 200 magnification, we saw a bright light that was just to the left and below the moon. And so the camera operator moved that the lens over to focus the viewfinder on that bright light, and then we began zooming on that object and a little bit at a time and make sure it, you know, stayed in focus, and there it was, you know. And so I said, look at this, look at this. And then the dog started barking, and a lot of people came over, and they were astonished at what we were seeing, and they were looking through the camera. And,
all right, what about the occupants, Doctor?
We were able to get tight enough on the front of the object that we could see that there was entities in these three ports. The outside of the craft was being lit by the moon, but there was light that was coming from the interior of the craft that was lighting this area where these entities were. Now, you could see through the camera that they all didn't look like the same kind of entity. And, you know, they were moving around and they were manipulating something. They were doing something as we were watching them.
All right, so, I'd like to add, I can see them, and anybody can see them. If you go to the video, you can make out the occupants of the craft. Now, were you able, with your eyes, to get any more detail? You said it was obvious they weren't the same kind of entities, but can you give us any more detail than that? Or is that what I was...
With the naked eye, looking through the lens finder and the camera,
right.
Was just about what you're seeing. Now, if you go to full image analysis under show references, you're going to see analysis of the Comburgas Turkey UFO videos, graphic analysis. And it was done by Mario Valdez, Santiago, Chile. If you scroll down the page, you'll see the first two pictures. You'll see what we saw basically through the camera was two entities, which you couldn't see really distinctly. Now,
right.
And then you go down.
Not series. Everybody has a computer. A lot of people listening don't have a computer. What was the basic analysis?
Basic analysis was that these were some kind of entities that were manipulating some kind of machinery in the craft. Now, there are other photographs or pictures in the analytical video where you can see, for example, the eyes I mean, that's how clear it was through the camera. So all this here, I realize people don't, everybody doesn't have a computer. But
a lot of people are on the road right now, in trucks, whatever.
May I just interject here and say
go ahead, Ryan.
You know, it might be disturbing to some people who are not used to seeing this type of thing, and people should know that it might be shocking to some people. But one thing to know about these videos is that they were given to the Turkey Scientific and Technology Board, which is sponsored by the government, and they tried to debunk it, and had to finally release a two-page report that concluded that these are not balloons, they're not models, etc. And then also, I've had conversations with Bruce McAbee, and Bruce McAbee has said publicly that to him, this is not a hoax. So, everything is pretty much publicly available now for the public. If you want to see actual aliens, actual creatures, now we finally, after all this time, actually have credible photographs, not hoaxes like we've seen in the past. And also in Turkey, Roger, maybe you could talk about the culture in Turkey. I mean, this was all over the headline news in Turkey and all over Europe and everywhere, and we didn't hear a peep about it here in the United States. That's basically the reason why I've just tried to document it here. I just documented what is already publicly available and translated it from Turkish to English. And I'll get off the phone and let the next caller come in. Great show, Art. I'm so glad to have you back on the air.
Do you speak Turkish?
No. No, but I've had to. It's been quite a pain, Art. I've had to go and use a translator, which is kind of crazy because these translators, like Google Translator, they don't translate properly.
I know.
So you have to. Yeah, I'm sure you do know because of the Philippines, but. I've had tried to contact the original witnesses, and there's multiple people there that seen this thing, but to them it's no big deal in Turkey. It's part of their culture. They call them the djinn. You know, they have these underground bases there, and it's just fascinating. So, great show tonight. You're probably the first major show to break this news here in the United States, and it's just important that people know about it. So,
Ryan, thank you so very much, and thank you for your work. And Roger, we'll be back in a moment. So, we're the first to be breaking this, the translated stuff, all of it, it's up on the website. And there's a lot to go through. So, if you want to know whether or not they're really here, this would be a case you can investigate until your eyes blur and you'll get real information. This is Dark Matter.